Welcome into another edition of MCM Radio. Your host, Jimmy Morris, joined as always by Terry Lambert. Terry, how are you tonight?
Doing good. What's up, Jimmy?
Not too much. We're going to spend show tonight breaking down the draft, talking about the guys. We broke down the first three picks in a couple episodes at the end of last week. We'll refresh that a little bit, and then we'll talk about day three, what the Titans did on that day. Also, I'm going to be joined here in just a minute by John Green, a cornerback out of UConn, who signed with the Titans as an undrafted free agent. So we'll talk to him a little bit about how that all worked out and what his plans are going forward. So actually, he's on the line now, so we'll go ahead and bring him up. John, how are you tonight?
I'm good, Jim. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Jimmy, and you will hear Terry here in just a second as well. And so we'll kind of go back and forth asking a few questions. So talk about what happened at the end of the draft. Did you get calls from multiple teams, and what happened when you got the call from the Titans? And, you know, just kind of your plans going forward. When will you be in Nashville and stuff like that?
So, I was in contact throughout the whole draft process. I was in contact with multiple different teams, Tennessee being one of them. And on the third day after, probably about 30 minutes after the draft was concluded, I got a call from my agent saying he worked out a deal with Tennessee. So I was excited about that because I'm excited about the opportunity there. And, you know, it's right in Nashville, so it's a great place to be. I was excited once I got the call, and first thing I did was probably call my mother and told her, and she was excited as well. So,
UConn's kind of been a pipeline for defensive backs in the NFL. Having a guy like Obi there this year attract a lot of scouts, and do you feel like that kind of helped you catch some scouts' eyes?
Yeah, Obi was – we knew Obi was a freak when he first got to UConn. You know, the guy, his physical attributes itself, his size, his strength is outstanding. So, we knew he was going to attract a lot of scouts coming into the next year. But then when he went to the Senior Bowl, that really took his career to a whole nother level where now the scouts could see he could play football. And, you know, and then he went to the Combine, put up crazy numbers, and then – you know, he attracted a whole lot of attention towards this senior class that I was in at UConn. So, we had a good number of scouts out there. I think we're missing just a few teams. But he definitely helped in terms of exposure for the rest of the guys that were there, like myself and Javon, Michael Myers and Bobby and Andreas. So I thank them for that as well. But you know, we also did our part in terms of performance wise.
Talk about what you think the biggest strength of your game is as you enter, this first training camp in the NFL, and what do you think maybe is the biggest thing you need to work on?
Well, my strength is I have great recovery speed. I have a great recovery speed, and I have a knack for just getting to the ball. And I have a great understanding for an excellent understanding for what the receiver is doing, because I came from a receiver background. I played receiver for a while, and that helped me expand my knowledge for both cornerback and receiver, because I know what the cornerback thinks. And then moving to cornerback, it was such a smooth transition that I was able to flip my brain and process what the receiver was doing at the same time. So, it was a good transition. You know, it was for the best, and I made a lot of plays at the corner position, playing both inside and outside. So I would say what I have to work on maybe is getting a little more aggressive out of my break. I'm pretty good off in my off coverage, but in terms of my break, I feel like I could get a little more aggressive so I can get there just a split second faster.
Yeah, watching some of your tape, it's kind of hard to find, but I found some video against ECU against going against Zay Jones, the record breaking receiver there. Yeah, it seems like you kind of excel in off man coverage, kind of, you know, clicking and closing, diagnosing what was in front of you. Was Zay the best receiver that you faced in your time at UConn, or was it somebody else?
I mean, I'd have to say Justin Hardy, which was – he was there before Zay Jones. He was a lot more explosive. His change of direction was outstanding. He had great hands. He also had the record there and for the most receptions in the country at the time. And that was my sophomore year. But, I mean, he was probably a little better than Zay Jones, but Zay Jones, he's a raw athlete. You know, he could catch the ball. His route running abilities are excellent. I mean, facing him the whole game was pretty much was a great challenge to me. And, you know, I learned a lot from just playing him, man. We were talking the whole game, you know. He was giving me his props, and I was giving him his props. I mean, but I think the best receiver is probably Justin Hardy, which was the year before him.
Talk about the opportunity to be coached by Dick LeBeau. Obviously, you know, an NFL legend on defense. So talk about kind of your familiarity with him and how excited you are about being able to work with him.
I'm very excited, you know. I'm very excited to go into the program. I see their defense. They run a lot of cover two, which I love. I love playing the cover two scheme. So, I mean, you know, Coach Malarkey said, he said I have a great opportunity ahead of me that I could really battle out for a spot at the corner position there. So I'm excited. I'm ready to go to work, and I feel like I'm learning a lot.
I think you've landed in a pretty good spot. I think me and Jimmy would both agree that corner was Titans' number one need heading into this offseason. And it's really not solidified. You know, they got a bunch of guys there, but beyond that top three, it's anybody's game. So how confident are you that you can stick on this roster going forward?
I mean, I'm extremely confident because, as I said, I grew up in Miami, Florida, actually, and there's a lot of competition out here. So I was competing since I was in Pop Warner, so with some of the top athletes, which all went to, like, big colleges. You know, it's almost like I had a chip on my shoulder where I'm trying to compete with my best friend who's actually – just got picked up as well, played at UM, and, you know, competing with a whole bunch of other guys just to – so, I mean, competition is one of my strongholds. So when the competition gets rough, you know, I start really showing my true colors. So I feel like I have a great opportunity ahead of me and a great team to fulfill this opportunity and a great environment as well right in the city of Nashville. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's a good spot for you, and because we all really thought the Titans would draft at least two corners in this draft, and they came away from it with only one. So, like Terry said, there's a lot of room there for a guy like you to make the team. Talk about how much special teams did you play at UConn, and you know, is that something that you're excited about doing? Because I mean, I'm sure you know that's a way a lot of guys are able to stick, because if they can excel at special teams, you know, that gives them something different. That helps them make the roster. So talk about kind of your experience playing special teams, and is that something that you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I played special teams all four years, you know. That's where I started out, you know. Special teams, as you said, it'll get you on the field quick, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I played all four running teams, punt, kickoff, kick return. You know, I did all of that. I was also a backup kicker. So, I mean, at one point at UConn. So, I mean, I had my fair share of special teams plays. And I really enjoy playing special teams, especially kickoff. I love running down the field and hitting somebody. That's a pleasure. Punt as well, you know. It's you and that one man with the ball, and he got so much room. You know, I love that thrill. So, I mean, it's something I really enjoy. As I said, you know, I played kicker in high school, and then at one point our first string kicker went down, so they named me the backup kicker for the upcoming week against – I forgot what team we're facing. But I had a great time playing special teams.
I reached out to my UConn guy, and I asked him about you this morning. First thing out of his mouth was speed. Do you agree that that's kind of your bread and butter? And what did you run? What 40 time did you run at your pro day?
So at the pro day, leading up to the pro day, I was clocking 4.2s and 4.3s consistently. So going into the pro day, I was expecting a low 4.3 and a 4.2, and I actually ended up achieving that. So I ran a 4.31, was my lowest that they clocked me at. And then going and at UConn, you know, I was known for my speed. Drills, it was funny because actually doing the drills and winter workouts, I went all the drills back to back, and then the next year coming in, which is mine and Obi's senior year, Obi will win one and I'll be like, what? And then I'll win one and it'll be like, okay, now we started competing again, because, you know, I say my speed definitely helped my game in terms of it bailed me out of a lot of situations. It also helped me get down the field on special teams. So, but I'm a low 4.3 guy.
All right, last thing from me. What NFL team did you root for growing up, and who was your favorite player?
I have to say my favorite player was Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning has always been my favorite player. Watching him play and dominate the game for year after year and put up numbers, and the way he was able to coach the offense up, that was honestly an amazing thing to watch. That's something I could tell my kids. I think, you know, they're going to say, oh, Dad, you ever seen Peyton Manning play? I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, I've seen that man play every Sunday. I loved it, so.
Last thing for me, is there a corner out in the league that you kind of admire or you strive to be like, maybe like a role model to yourself? Is there a guy out there that you say, hey, man, that's what I want to be one day?
I would say the Honey Badger, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, for his size. That dude could really play some football. Despite all the stuff that happened in his past, I mean, he's probably one of the most exciting corners to watch in the league right now, because he's 5'8", 5'9", can come down and fill the hole and then play nickel, play a little linebacker. He's a real hybrid type defensive guy. So, and he got a great mindset in terms of football. So I feel like that's probably my best. I look up to him the most, because watching him play college, I still think he should have won the Heisman. I felt like it was kind of rigged, but he should have won the Heisman that year. Dude, he really had a knack for getting to the ball and just making plays on the ball against talented receivers day in and day out. So,
well, John, we really appreciate you joining us. Like we said, I mean, I think that the cornerback position is a position on this roster that's very much in flux, and so I think you come in, have a good camp, I think you'll have a really good shot at making the team. And we'll definitely be rooting for you and hope to catch up with you again somewhere down the line.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Good luck, John.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks.
All right. So that was John Green, the undrafted free agent, some of the Titans out of training camp. And, hey, guy that can run, you know, and we'll see ball skills and that kind of stuff when he gets in camp. But, I mean, I think you'd agree. We weren't just saying to him because he was on. That he has a good chance to make the team. I mean, corner is a position on this team that, like you said, after the top three, it's really wide open. And, again, I think we're both a little bit surprised that they only took one corner in the draft. So he comes in and has a good camp. He's got a really good shot at making this team.
Yeah, 4.31 speed don't hurt either. So it's anybody's game after that top three.
Yeah, all right. So, we really appreciate him coming on. Thanks to his agent for kind of setting that up. And so hopefully he'll make the team, and we'll get a chance to catch up with him again down the line and try to talk to him maybe during training camp again. All right, so like I said, we did two podcasts last week. You can go back and check those out if you didn't catch them. We did one Thursday night after the first two picks of Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson. And then did one on Friday night, breaking down Tywan Taylor and Jonnu Smith. Didn't get back to do one over the weekend. I think Terry was pretty much exhausted after John Robinson traded 16 times to get, you know, 10 picks. so we didn't get back to that. But we can kind of go through those guys really quickly here. Fifth round pick. How do you say his name? Jayon Brown? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Jayon Brown.
Yeah. Okay, so Jayon Brown, the outside linebacker from UCLA. Again, we talked a lot about them needing to add depth at edge behind Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo. You know, Kevin Doxville being a major question mark. So kind of talk about Brown, what do you think he brings to this team?
Well, I think he fits more on the inside. I think you're getting that Sean Spence type player, the guy that's a little undersized but can really move around. I haven't studied Brown, but from whatever everything I read says that he excels in coverage, and he's got some upside to him. So there's some people in the scouting community that think he can be a starter one day, but I think his day one role is that third linebacker guy that's going to come, you know, get the running back out of the backfield, and guy that's going to come and get the tight end out of the backfield. You know, play that Sean Spence type role. And linebacker speed was something we talked about a lot. It was a need. We had a linebacker listed as a top five need all offseason long. So to see Robinson move up, you know, I said that he might move up if there's somebody on the board that he really wants on Friday night, and sure enough, he did. I had plenty of picks to do it. So Robinson felt that getting another linebacker was a huge need. So he knocked that out in round five. So Brown is a guy that I think was actually comped to Woodyard by Josh Norris over at Roto World. So that's interesting when you think about Jonnu Smith, who was comped to Delanie Walker. So
yeah,
Titans going after some guys that are modeled after their own. But I think Brown fills a need, and I think he's got a role on this team. I think he's a special teamer and a third down linebacker.
Yeah, and like you said, and you had a good post today about, you know, kind of things that we can learn from this draft from John Robinson. And I think we saw that he has guys that he wanted. He had guys that he wanted coming in. And when he started to get a little bit nervous that those guys might not be on the board where he was sitting, he was willing to go up and get them. And, you know, we talked a lot about draft capital and that kind of stuff leading into the draft. But, you know, he didn't move back early in the draft like we thought that he might to pick up a second-round pick. But I think, again, I think maybe we were kind of looking at it wrong and not thinking that, like, when you got a guy you want, when you got a guy that thinks that he thinks fits his system, you're willing to spend a little bit more to go up and get him. Because, again, you know, having more picks is not necessarily better if you can't get the players that you want. So we saw him, like you said, move up a couple of times to get guys. And, you know, I think that, again, it's just not, it's nice to see the Titans have a general manager who has a philosophy and go into a draft and execute that philosophy, get guys that he wants to fill those roles. And, again, I'm just amazed that, you know, again, still the chatter about, you know, Corey Davis being a reach and all that stuff. When you look at, you know, how the receivers went after him, all three guys being off the board, you know, at pick nine. And then if you look at, you know, the little run there in the third round, you know, the Cooper Kupp, your boy, got picked right before the Titans were on the clock. And, you know, they moved up to get Taylor. And then you saw a couple more guys go off the board right after him. So it just seemed like really a really good deal for where guys were going to go in this draft, what teams were going to take those guys, and he positioned himself to move up or back, or, you know, whatever it was, to get the guy that he wanted. And so I think you saw something similar with Jayon Brown. All right, so then the sixth round, they take Corey Levin, the guard out of Chattanooga. And again, you know, it's just funny in this draft, it was a draft where, I mean, obviously Brown being from UCLA, big school, but, you know, they took a lot of guys from smaller schools. When you look at these first few picks, you got obviously Jackson from USC and Brown from UCLA, but then you look at a guy from Western Michigan, a guy from Western Kentucky, you know, a guy from Florida International. So going off the board a little bit, but again, finding guys that fit, guys that he likes, guys that he thinks can come in and fill a specific role on this roster. And so how do you think Corey Levin projects as a guard, and do you think he can come in and push for one of those guard spots?
Well, I do. We don't know. We kind of assume that Josh Klein will be the starter, and I don't know how valid that is. You got Sebastian Tritola still in that mix, and now you throw in Corey Levin, who has a lot of fans in the draft community. Jim Coburn is one of the top analytics guys out there, and his report on him was just glowing. He takes starts into account. He takes stats, numbers that you or I wouldn't even begin to think to consider, and he creates thresholds, and Corey Levin hit all of them. So he thinks Corey Levin is a high-end starter, which is it's nice to know that you can get a high-end starter in round six potentially. So I don't know if you see it right away, but I think it's a spot where the Titans need a competition. You don't really know what you have with Tritola yet. You know what you've got with Klein, and it's just kind of a middle of the road. He's not going to let anything go terribly wrong like Chance Warmack did. And I think Klein's fine, but it's nice to know you've got some upside behind a guy like Klein.
Still can't get over Chance Warmack. I mean, I thought
you and me both.
That was one of the safest picks in the history of the world. And it turned out, I mean, he was a disaster considering where he was drafted. He wasn't always terrible, but he was never anywhere close to what they thought they were getting when they drafted him. And just, you know, a shame that they've had to spend more picks to fill that role. When they drafted him, we're like, man, there's your guard for the next 10 years, you know. And obviously it didn't play out that way.
Too much,
you know,
Taco Bell,
I mean,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Anything at some of these positions, like inside linebacker, like guard, like cornerback even, that brings competition, where you've got some guys that are good. Like, I mean, Klein is a serviceable starter. But, you know, if you want to believe in the pro football focus grades for offensive linemen, I mean, he graded out as the worst starter on the Titans offensive line last year. So definitely a place they could upgrade. Now, again, not a spot where they were going to spend a first-round pick to upgrade because he wasn't, you know, wasn't that bad. But a spot where you can bring some guys in, especially later in the draft, and then you've got competition. And we know that, I mean, competition makes everybody better. And so it's good to have those guys. And it'll be fun, you know, to have a roster this year where, you know, in the past, when we do our 53-man roster projections, you know, like during camp and then at the very end, you know, for the last 2 years of the Titans, it's been kind of hard to get to 53 and not like you're sitting there with 56 guys you don't know who the last three are to cut. You write down your projection, you've got, you know, 48 guys that you feel good about, and then you've got five more spots to fill, and you're like, well, who in the world are they going to keep out of this group? They're all kind of the same. None of them are that good. That's not going to be the case going forward here in the next couple of years, and I think we're going to see, you know, these roster cuts. They're going to have some tough choices to make, and we're going to see them cut guys. They're going to get picked up quickly by other teams, and you know, can make those rosters. And again, that's not any kind of knock on the Titans. That just means, hey, they've got enough good players on the roster that they're going to cut guys, and other teams are willing to, you know, scoop them up, when that hasn't necessarily been the case for the last couple of years. So, you know, it obviously it's good to see things moving in that direction. So when we go to the seventh round, where, you know, John Robinson decided to pick up a bunch of picks, you got Caraway, the linebacker from TCU, and I guess there's your edge guy, the depth there. You got Brad Seaton, offensive tackle, Villanova. Again, you know, depth at tackle. They've obviously very happy with their two starters, but not sure exactly what you have behind those guys. I mean, Dennis Kelly was good in the game that he played last year, but how good do you feel about him if he's got to start for half the year or whatever? So, again, a competition at that spot. And then Muhammad, the running back from California. So with those three guys, what do you think their chances are of, you know, making the roster slash contributing anything in 2017 or beyond?
Yeah, first of all, I love what Robinson did. I hated that I was flying solo on the site because I had to rattle this stuff
right
up, and I was kind of convinced that he was messing with me while you were out running marathons and whatnot. So, but, you know, you get – three seventh-round picks. It was really four with Levin. He was back into the six. So you get four lottery tickets over two. You know, that's never a bad thing. So you're just getting these guys that you would probably be trying to sign as free agents anyway, just going ahead and getting them through the door. So I like Caraway.
Productive player, 17 sacks over the past 2 years. Pretty athletic for a seventh-round pick. I think he was in the 80th percentile in the broad jump and ran a really good 60-yard shuttle and ran a pretty good 40-yard dash. So 6'3", 242, really productive. Kind of a guy like Aaron Wallace. It's probably a guy that you pick one or the other, depending on how Dodd is, of course, to stick on this roster and being like that fourth pass rusher. So I like the Caraway probably the best out of those picks. Brad Seaton, I don't know a lot about. There's one video and he's just throwing dudes. At Villanova, he was obviously the class of the athletic field there. He was just he didn't look overly quick, but he was just dominant. So it's really hard to say how he'll translate to the NFL. And then you look at Muhammad. So I was kind of banging the running back drum all draft season long. People really weren't on board with it, and it was just a simple numbers game. You know, they're not going to go into the season with two running backs. They're going to have three. And they needed a guy with some speed, a guy that maybe had some upside, a guy that could maybe make some things happen out of the backfield if something happened to DeMarco Murray. And then maybe a guy that could also return a kick or two. So Muhammad fills that role. He's 5'7", like 170 pounds, but supposedly has 4.3 speed. So he didn't play a lot at California. Never really got the lion's share of the carries, but I think I'd be surprised if you saw him on offense. But he does bring speed to the table, and he kind of makes a guy like Eric Weems, you know, that was brought in for special teams. All those guys, you know, John Robinson signed three or four or five guys in free agency right off the bat. A couple of these guys, it just makes you wonder who he's going to keep. So I think Muhammad has a place on special teams. I think he probably makes the roster just based off the fact that the Titans just don't really have numbers at running back.
Yeah, and I think if anything, like you said, if a guy, and we talked about this a little bit when we were talking to Green, I mean, if you're going to make the roster as a third running back or as, you know, the fourth or fifth corner, whatever that may be, you got to be able to play special teams. And so I think they think they've got that in Muhammad, a guy that can come in and help out there, and he does have a chance to be a change of pace back that they don't have. They haven't had a roster really in a couple of years, because even when Antonio Andrews is your third guy, he's not a guy, you know, you're going to line up and throw to very much out of the backfield. So, getting some more things on the roster, some more tools for Marcus Mariota to have around him to work with. I wouldn't expect any big contribution out of him next year. But, you know, if they can get him a package or something, they added a bunch of speed. And, I mean, I think that's the thing that we talked about leading into the draft that they needed. And if you want to run some of that read option stuff or, you know, whatever you want to call it, those package plays, they needed some more guys that could, you know, put some stress on the defense in different directions for that stuff to really be effective. And now you've got two tight ends now that can stretch the seam. You've got a receiver on the outside that can do pretty much anything you want him to do. You've got a slot receiver that hopefully can actually, you know, run a route that he's supposed to run, unlike Kendall Wright, that is. So just adding some stuff there. And, again, I mean, I think we're both a little bit surprised at how much offense they took in this draft. We thought it would be more of a heavy defensive draft. It didn't end up playing out that way. But, I mean, like you said in your post earlier today, Robinson came in with a plan, and he executed that plan. And the obvious, you know, whatever, the obvious emphasis here was to get more weapons around Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, and I just love – my favorite thing about John Robinson is nobody's out of reach. Maybe like the top two picks this year were out of reach, but literally nobody on the board is out of reach. He's going to get who he wants, and it's calculated, and he's got – there's no telling how many deals he had on the table. I think Pro Football Talk said when the Bears traded up and got Trubisky, all of Robinson's deals kind of fell through. But there's no telling what he had on the table. You saw him have in the Monday Morning Quarterback article, you saw that, you know, the Chiefs supposedly had a deal in place to come up to five. And I'm sure he was in talks with the Bills. I'm sure he was in talks with the Browns.
So he's just so prepared coming into these drafts that he can go up, he can go down. I'm so impressed. And you know, when a guy like Taylor fell to him in the third round, he came up 10 or 12 picks. He got him. Make sure you get your guy. So it's just so refreshing coming off of a guy like Rustin Webster, who seemed to never move around. I think the only time he moved up, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is for Justin Hunter. And that was just an awful, awful deal. I think he moved down and still got Doriel Green Beckham, but for the most part, he stood firm. So you pretty much knew who he was going to pick, 15 or so picks ahead, because there was just no chance of him moving around. So I love John Robinson's thinking there that anybody's available, and he just makes it happen. It's awesome.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it's like, you know, Rustin Webster was just kind of letting the draft come to him. Like, he was just kind of sitting there and waiting, well, let's see what happens when we're on the clock, and we'll pick, you know, we'll start to figure it out then. Whereas, like, the Robinson's kind of playing. And when he decides that, you know, the guy that he wants is like you said, within striking distance, obviously, he's willing to go get him, you know, and not, you know, take the chance of him maybe being there, maybe not being there when he gets on the clock. Real quickly on that, on the Monday morning quarterback thing, what did you think of that Chiefs deal? Because, you know, part of me, it's very intriguing to, you know, to have another offseason knowing that you have two first-round picks in a draft coming up. But you made the point when we were talking earlier this week. I mean, if you think about how – it's a long – well, the Chiefs have 27, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a long way from 5 to 27. And, you know, obviously wanting a receiver, you know, they would have been long gone by 27. And then when you think about the Chiefs and their roster and how talented it is, when you think about it, it's not like, you know, when you got two first-round picks from the Rams, obviously you knew what the pick was going to be last year in 2016. But then 2017, you drafted Jared Goff. I mean, you had a pretty good idea that you were going to get a fairly hot pick. So, I mean, that just kind of adds value to that. But when we talk about the Chiefs, who have a pretty talented roster, who seem to be in contention, you know, around the playoffs every year, you know, you're looking at a first-round pick that's probably somewhere in the mid to late 20s. It's not quite as exciting to be looking at that pick versus, you know, what you were hoping would be a top 10 pick and ended up being a top 5 pick. So what do you think of that deal that was on the table? And obviously you're going to say they shouldn't have taken it because then they wouldn't have gotten Corey Davis and you would have been so sad. But, you know, objectively, how close do you think that was a reasonable deal that, you know, how close do you think John Robinson was to pulling the trigger on that deal?
I haven't run it on the trade chart, but it was 2-1. It was a 27 and then the 1 next year. And then it was a 2 and a 4, I believe, this year. So we talked all offseason. John Robinson wants his 2. Well, you start to dive into it. It's a back end 2. It's a back end 4. It's a back end 1. And then it's a probable back end 1 next year. So that was my hang up on it. You know, if the Chiefs were a middle-of-the-road team, you might start to consider it when you bump up from 27 and start talking about, like, 15, 14, 13, something like that. Then I think you consider it. But to fall immediately from 5 to 27 and know that you're not going to get one of those big three receivers, likely, to just, you know, we probably would have ended up with, what, Adore Jackson and maybe Zay Jones. You know, maybe they go a different route, but they wanted a receiver. Zay was probably the next on the board. So you're talking about the difference between Corey Davis and Zay Jones, which I think is huge, just athletically. So, yeah, I wouldn't have taken it. Obviously, you know, you know my love of Corey Davis. But I thought it was kind of interesting. All the talk leading up to this was the receivers aren't going to come off the board till 16. They literally went 5, 7, and 9. So I think Robinson knew what he was doing. I think he had his information. You know, going back to our chat with Matt Miller, these GMs gather information. It's not just scouting players and making a draft board. It's gathering information around the league. It's doing mocks. It's, well, what happens if this player falls? What happens if this guy falls? It's talking to different GMs. It's talking to people in the media, trying to figure out where the heck these guys are going to land. So I don't think John Robinson would have seriously considered it because I think he wanted one of those
at least Mike Williams or Corey Davis. I don't know how interested they were in Ross, but I think he would have had a really hard time waiting to 18 and been on pins and needles waiting for one of them receivers to fall to him.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's really how you have to evaluate it, I think. You're right there is the difference between Corey Davis and whoever they would have been able to get. And, you know, maybe they could – but the thing is, you know, you think, okay, well, maybe they could have moved back up to get one of those guys. But when they're all off the board by nine, the what he would have had to give up to get back up there to get one of them, there would have been no sense in making the deal in the first place. So, yeah, I mean, I think he definitely went the smart route there. And like you said, you know, as soon as Trubisky went two, it just kind of all fell apart, the stuff they had for five. And so I think they were probably like, well, you know, we'll say Corey Davis. And I'm sure they're perfectly happy with that because, I mean, I think, you know, and you did a great job of, you know, identifying him as a guy that was a perfect fit for the Titans. For I mean, you've been banging that drum since January. And so, you know, but it makes sense. And like you said, when you look at the guys they drafted, you can just tell that one of the most important things to John Robinson is production at the college level. And, you know, again, you say that and it sounds so simple and obvious, right? I mean, of course that's what you want. But we just saw time and time again the previous two regimes, they didn't value that as much as, you know, it seems like they should have. And so it's just refreshing to have a guy that does value that. And like you were saying, I mean, a guy that has a plan is just awesome. Okay, so now, you know, the draft's done. They found the undrafted free agents. You know, we'll have mini camps and all that stuff. Where do you think they still need the most help on the roster? Like, what's the biggest hole left on this roster right now?
I think we've already talked about it. I think it's corner. You know, like we said, after the top three, it's wide open. If you want to carry five, I think those last two are open between – a Kalen Reed, a Bryce McCain, or an undrafted free agent, someone they might find on the waiver wire. I think that's a spot they attack. I think that's an obvious spot they attack. And then safety. I'm pretty sure they've only got three. Could be wrong there. But I'm pretty sure it's just Searcy, Cyprian, and Byard. So that could be a spot where they still need somebody on the waiver wire or still a free agent. Those are really the two only spots of weakness I see. If they don't believe in Muhammad as the third running back, I could see them adding a back there. But, you know, nothing major. You can sign a guy off the street and have success as a running back. So the corner and safety for me.
Have they done enough, in your opinion, in the secondary to be – competitive on that side of the ball? Because, I mean, I think we would agree, you know, there was a point last year, I guess really before the Jacksonville game, where we all really felt like they were going to win the division. They were going to be in the playoffs, and they were going to be a pretty scary team in the playoffs to certain teams. I mean, again, facing a guy like Tom Brady with that secondary was not going to end well. But teams that weren't dynamic throwing the ball, you know, like when you look at how it played out, I mean, they would have gotten the Raiders without Derek Carr in the first round. I mean, I think we all think that with a healthy Marcus Mariota, again, we can play that game with Derek Carr, but blah, blah, blah. But let's just, for our sake right now, say, you know, a healthy Marcus Mariota in that game without Derek Carr. And, I mean, even with Derek Carr, the Titans beat the Raiders earlier in the season. Now, they had this was a stupid offensive pass interference call against Andre Johnson that shouldn't have been called, but they actually lost the game. But, you know, so looking at it now, when you think about, you know, the what we think the Colts will have as a passing attack, you know they're pretty dynamic. When you look at teams like the Patriots and the, you know, the upper level teams in the AFC, have they done enough, do you think, to be able to be talked about with those teams and that they could win a playoff game against one of those teams, you know, next January?
I think they have. I think the one spot where I'm a little concerned is strong safety. With John Cyprian, our friends in Jacksonville, you know, you listen to any of them that are educated about football, they all you know, John Cyprian was the laughing stock. You know, I know he's a big hitter. I know he's great in run support. I don't think you want him on an island. I don't think you want him covering a half field. So
it's going to be interesting to see how LeBeau uses him. Is he going to just kind of defer to Searcy in passing down, or a guy that they sign or bring in?
I can't trust him yet as a full-time player. He's going to be great in the run support. I just don't know how he's going to be against the pass. Now, at corner, I think they're a lot better. You know, you get a huge upgrade in Logan Ryan, obviously. And I think it's a huge upgrade in Adore Jackson. You know, he might be a little raw, but purely athletically, he's a huge upgrade over a guy like Parrish Cox, who was just giving up deep balls and deep balls and deep balls. So I think you add two corners there. We'll see about LeSean Sims. I need to go watch LeSean Sims. It's on my list now that the draft is behind us. So I don't really know what to have in LeSean Sims. He obviously made that huge play against Kansas City, but like I said on Twitter today, you know, I think that was more of a case of just Alex Smith making one of those crazy bad throws that he's notorious for. So I think they have three pretty solid corners. I think they have one really good one. We'll see on Adoree and we'll see on LeSean. There's still some uncertainty there. You know, you didn't go sign two or three guys in free agency. You signed one. So we'll see. It's think they're more talented, but we still don't know. So those two young corners plus Cyprian kind of still give me some pause, but I definitely think they're a lot better than they were last year.
Yeah, another thing I think we have to, like, really step back and look at is how bad they were last year. And, you know, something that Samari Rawl was on Midday 180, and I guess he does some draft breakdown stuff for a side or whatever, but it was talking about how good Adoree Jackson's ball skills are. You know, and that's something that, I mean, obviously this team last year was having cornerbacks that could actually find the football. You know, and they got better. Once Parrish Cox was off the team, the secondary actually looked better than it did with him out there. It was a slight upgrade from that. So I think they are better, but I'm just not sure they're good enough. And then again, so you think, okay, they've got to either have a really good pass rush or a really good secondary. And I think they're kind of mediocre at both. So that scares you a little bit, but then you just look at the offense and hope they can score enough points to, you know, hang in games with those teams and have a chance to win games late. And again, you know, back to the thing that they talked about last year, if they can establish their will, if they can hang in games, you've got the two big backs, you've got the really good offensive line, you can grind a game out in the fourth quarter, and we know that's ultimately what they want to do. Now they want to be more explosive on offense. I mean, obviously you can see that with what they drafted, but I think their bread and butter is still going to be grinding it out, being able to win games like that in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and you know, I think we forget how bad this roster was 2 years ago. It's not going to happen in one off season. It's not going to happen in two off seasons. It's not going to happen in three off seasons. It's a process here. I think if we can all agree that John Robinson's on the right path, I think we can all – well, I know a portion of the fan base would like to go all Jaguars on free agency and sign everybody and just plug every hole and get locked into those bad deals, but that's not the way they're going to roll. And that's a smart move. You know, don't tie up your money and not have the ability to re-sign your own. So it's important to remember how bad they were when they started. So, no, John Robinson did not plug all the holes this offseason. There was that's just not the smart thing to do. He's going to patchwork. You know, you saw him do it with Josh Klein last year. So, there's still some clear holes on this roster, but I think the offense is really, really good. So, for them to win this year, I think they're going to have to outscore some people, but I think you'll see them attack defense pretty hard next year.
That's a great point. It's a great point that this roster was so bad when he took it over, and it is going to take more than even two off seasons to really get everything that they need. But, you know, again, looking at building the offense up first, and I think that makes sense because I think that's the side of the ball that they're closer to being really good on. And, you know, if we can get a healthy year out of Marcus Mariota, then I think you'll see big differences there. And I think they're going to have a legitimate offense this year. That is going to be, you know, when you look at the end of the year as far as scoring average and that kind of stuff, I think they'll be a top 10 team, which is going to be really exciting to see because it's not something that we've had here in a really long time. So hopefully that's how it shakes out. All right, so that'll do it basically for tonight. We're still going to try to do a show every week going forward. We might cut some of them to 30 minutes just because there's not going to be as much stuff to talk about. Really until training camp starts. So, you know, we get tired of all the repetitive draft stuff, talking about the same things over and over. But at the same time, it does give us something to talk about. So it is a little bit sad from that standpoint when it's over. But we've still got plenty to break down about the roster, and we'll do kind of maybe in the next couple of weeks, do some position by position breakdowns, what they have, you know, guys that are on the bubble, what we think they'll look like in training camp. So stay tuned for all that. Obviously, keep checking out the site, MuseumMiracles.com. Terry, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Corey Davis, baby. We nailed it. We got him.
There you go. Yeah, it's exciting. You know, and to see, you know, some of the comps like the T.O. and stuff like that. I mean, if the Titans could have a dynamic receiver like that, I mean, that's just something they never had. So hopefully that's the way it pans out. So, all right. So for Terry, this is Jimmy saying thanks for listening. Check out the site, MuseumMiracles.com, and we will talk to you again next Tuesday night.